It was the first summer of peace in Europe. School was out and it was very hot. The shattered windows in our apartment were boarded up and it felt overcrowded with Uncle Hans, Tante Friel, Großmutter, Mother and me all in it. There was not much to do other than trying to stay out of each other's way. The city of Hamburg was devastated and dusty from the many years of war and would be so for many years to come. I was excited to learn that some charitable organization planned a summer camp for children to get them out of the rubble into the fresh air and let them live for a little while away from the broken down city. I applied for the position of camp counselor. It would free me from the crowded apartment, and the idea of camp life and children appealed to me. I was hired as a volunteer, and I set out by train away from ruins and dust to where heather and pine trees grew. It was the property of two long-retired nurses that wished to make it available to city kids who needed fresh air and sunshine. Luckily, there were sponsors to make this possible. I knew both persons well. The property consisted of many acres of heather and pine trees. There were two tiny houses. One was the home of the two nurses, the other was the camp headquarters. I was familiar with it. There was no running water. There was a pump in the kitchen and one outside. One bathroom. We expected 60 kids. Thanks to the sponsors, the grounds were now dotted with tents equipped with cots, pillows, and blankets. After the noisy city, all seemed very quiet except for the whispering pines. There seemed to be no one around when I arrived, and now I was afraid. I had never been a camp counselor before, and a lot of kids were expected. What if the kids did not like me? What do you do on a rainy day? After all, this was Hamburg, where it rains a lot. I visited the nurses who welcomed me, but other than making their land available, they wanted nothing to do with the camp. Then I was relieved to see someone walking amongst the tents. I was glad to talk to her. She was the administrator of this camp, and she told me that this very morning the cook had broken her leg. Was I the new cook? Good heavens, no. Then she said she knew of no one who wanted to be a cook on such short notice. I explained that I did not know how to cook, certainly not for 100 people. The lady seemed so desperate, and then I knew that I had just been unanimously elected to be the cook. She showed me the kitchen. It consisted of a small coal stove, a table, a pump near a sink. There were three pots, one very large one for the potatoes, a smaller one for veggies, and an even smaller one to boil eggs or heat water, and a frying pan. When I saw the three pots, I thought maybe this cooking was not all that complicated, though I wondered about the coal stove. I had never lit a fire before. The kids arrived together with the porta potties. There were 60 kids of all ages. They were jumpy and pale. All of them were thrilled to live in a tent like cowboys and to be taught how to peel potatoes, which seemed such a necessary skill for our camp life. My life as a cook had started, and I realized that it certainly was a very ill-equipped kitchen. I heated the children's breakfast cocoa in the pot for veggies and then served it in the water pitcher the staff used to bring in water for their wash basins. I borrowed a wash basin from them to mix the salad and hoped no one would see me. Dessert was usually no problem since they were all crazy about dried bananas, which we had plenty of. The kids called them dead man's fingers. Every day that big potato pot had to be filled to the brim. Only then could they begin their day. I wished I could have been with them on their paper chase and outdoor games, which led them so far afield. It was the stove that gave me so much trouble. On some days the fog sat heavily on the chimney and the kitchen filled with dense smoke. I knelt on the floor and blew into the embers. It took many tries to get a fire going. It was on a day when the kitchen was black with smoke, and there was soot all over me. that one of the sponsors sent an inspection team to make sure that we really existed. It was a lady from Canada with her interpreter. I knew the interpreter well. She had been a classmate. Her English was certainly not good at all, and since I spoke it well, she had to ask me many times to help her out. But there she stood in a good dress and lipstick, pretending to be an interpreter, while I, covered in soot, was fighting a difficult stove to boil a pot of potatoes. At that moment, life seemed unfair. Eileen was another lady who came to inspect us. She represented a British charity and came regularly. She was skinny, very friendly, and wore open-toe sandals. On her visit, she greeted most of us, then lit a cigarette, stretched out on a cot, and read a murder mystery for the remainder of her visit. Her reports on us were always very favorable. Our camp had many flaws, but to the children it represented a once-in-a-lifetime adventure. There was laughter and wild games, much singing and very strange food, and when after 2 weeks they boarded the train to go home, many of them pressed their faces to the window and cried.